Good morning. Welcome to the House Committee on Higher Education, Innovation, and Workforce Development. We're hopeful that a couple of our committee members will be joining us, but we got to get going because we have an important topic today. I don't know if your conversations over the last several days have been anything like mine and Representative Johnson's, I know the topic of today's presentation has come up regularly. We're glad that the Secretary of State's office is here to present their audit of community colleges. So, Mr. Blackmer, Ms. Blasey, and Ms. Zavitkovsky, if you could join us, please. We're eager to hear from you. As we get settled, I'll let the committee know that after your presentation, we'll be hearing from Ben Cannon and Jim Middleton, and also from Andrea Henderson and Elizabeth Cox Brand. So I think we're all interested in understanding the report. It's available online. I had a chance to read it the last couple of days. I know Representative Johnson did as well, probably some of the other committee members. So I hope you're also okay with us interrupting you at times with questions.
Thanks very much. Thank you. Chair Reed, members of the committee, my name is Gary Blackmer. I'm the director of the Secretary of State Audits Division. My duty here is relatively simple. I'm going to introduce the two members of the team and let them do the presentation, and then they can probably answer most of your questions, and if they can't, I'll take a run at it. I will turn it over to Carolyn Zavitkovsky and Sharon Blasey, who will walk through the audit report. So,
thank you.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Caroline Zavitkovsky. I'm a performance auditor at the Secretary of State Audits Division. And I'll be presenting on our recently released audit, Community Colleges, Targeted Investments Can Improve Student Completion Rates. So I'd like to start off by just going over three of our big takeaways. And I will go into more depth on these later. But the first takeaway is that we looked at a cohort of students, and we found that 24% of the students that we looked at completed an associate's degree or certificate over the seven-year time period that we looked at. We also found that community colleges are doing a lot to implement national leading strategies for student success, but a lot of these strategies are not reaching a large number of students. And finally, we found that coordination, support, and analytic capacity are needed to improve student success and completion. So the three major methods that we used to come to these findings were data analysis. We also conducted six site visits at community colleges across the state and conducted interviews, as well as conducted a survey of all 17 colleges. So we approached our audit by looking at how can the state and the colleges increase the number of completions, specifically within the middle 40 category of the 40-40-20 goals. We did this with the appreciation that the 40-40-20 can also serve as a proxy for broader state goals, such as a robust economy and having a highly skilled workforce, as well as providing potential opportunities for individual Oregonians to increase their income and have better job opportunities. So for our data analysis, we looked at a 2007-08 cohort. The reason that we went back this far is that we wanted to give students more time to complete. We had heard that a lot of community college students attend part-time and take a lot longer to complete, so we wanted to get that fuller picture. So looking at that cohort over 7 years, 24% again completed an associate's degree or certificate at an Oregon community college. We modeled our methodology after a study from the National Student Clearinghouse, and we found that our finding of 24% was in line with what they found as well. We filtered out non-degree seeking students, and we did that by modeling it after their methodology of using an enrollment threshold. So all of the students that we looked at had, during that 2007-08 year, taken at least one term of full-time or two terms of part-time, half-time credits to be considered degree seeking. We also looked at a statewide completion rate versus looking at individual college completion rates. We did this for a couple of reasons. First of all, there were a number of students who had gone to multiple community colleges, so we didn't make a judgment call over which college to put those students in. Additionally, we were concerned about if we reported on a college-level basis. By looking at just 1 year of a cohort, it could potentially be misleading for some of the colleges that have very small numbers of students, because that could be skewed if it was an outlying year. I do also want to point out that of the remaining 76% of students, some of those did transfer to universities. We found that roughly a third of them took at least one course at a four-year university in subsequent years. So again, we modeled this after the National Student Clearinghouse report, and in that report they looked at 36 states total, so not just Oregon. And in that report, for this two-year completion rate, we were the fifth lowest out of the 36 states.
Mr. Chair. I have a question. Representative yes. Johnson.
Thank you. Appreciate what you're here and testifying. So how did you actually track these students? Because one of the other components in the report is that the colleges themselves don't have a great metric in place for actually identifying certain types of students. So how did you, the Secretary of State's office, in this report actually identify these students? And
Chair Reed, Representative Johnson, that is why we use the enrollment thresholds using the methodology from the National Student Clearinghouse. So it's not a perfect representative. It was the best that we could get at to get at more degree-seeking students. So, again, we don't have a perfect answer. Right, but we modeled it after the National Student
Clearinghouse. But the point is you were able to come up with some data, I guess, in a fairly short period of time.
Yeah, we got the data from the Community College and Workforce Development. And
great, thank you.
Please go ahead.
Thank you. So we also disaggregated the data based on race and gender, and we found that, in general, many students of color had lower completion rates, as well as male students, and that those differences were more pronounced when we combined those two factors. So you can see from the chart that it ranges from an 11% completion rate for black male students to a 27% completion rate for white female students. And we did find that students can take a longer time period to complete. So the national, the federal measure for completion generally cuts off after 3 years. But you can see that the completion rate nearly doubles when you give students that longer time period. And even after the 7 years, 6% of our cohort was still enrolled at a community college. This is not entirely surprising because only a quarter of the students that we looked at in our cohort were enrolled exclusively full-time.
So did you just, you looked at this seven-year period, is there any reason to think that if you started with 2008 or 9 or 10 and did the same thing that you're likely to find significant differences in either direction?
Representative Reed, I do not have any basis to think that. The National Student Clearinghouse looked at a 7-8 cohort and then they looked at a 08 09 cohort with, again, a longer time period, and they just released that report a couple months ago for the 08-09 cohort, and there were not any dramatic differences.
And nothing to point to in Oregon that would say it's getting much better or much worse or anything else? Would we expect that it would be similar?
I can't really answer that.
Okay. Chair Reed, one of the things that our audit did point out.
Sorry to interrupt you. We need to ask you to introduce yourself.
I'm sorry.
This is your first comment. Thanks.
For the record, my name is Sharon Blasey, and I'm the audit manager.
Thanks.
For the audit. One of the things that our audit did point out briefly is that as colleges begin to implement leading practices, which we are seeing and we reported on, that could impact completion rates later.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I would like to add that one of the downsides of us going back 7 years is that we can't really link it to any of the more recent efforts that have been put forward. It could take a really long time for those to show up in the numbers.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome. So in addition to our data analysis, we also, as I mentioned, conducted 6 site visits. And we talked to community college administrators, student support staff, faculty and students to ask them about what are some of the challenges that students face for completing. I don't think that you'll be surprised to hear that one of the things that we heard is that students can face challenges with balancing out life commitments, such as working full-time or meeting family obligations with the time and cost that it takes to attend a college. We heard concerns about tuition affordability as well as textbook affordability, but the concerns also went beyond that to include affordable transportation, access to affordable childcare, finding ways to navigate services within the colleges, and students needing additional academic support. One thing that we did hear at the site visits and also with the survey that we conducted is that the colleges are doing an awful lot to address student success. So we heard some specific examples about innovative new programs that the colleges are implementing, and we also conducted a survey of 17 colleges. We got 100% response rate, and we asked them about 14 specific national best practices that were identified by the University of Texas. We found that on average, the colleges were implementing 10 out of the 14 to some extent. Some examples are listed there, but include like a student success course, which would be offered in a student's first year and could include things like time management or what resources are available on campus. But one of the things that we also found in that survey is that a lot of these practices aren't able to reach a large number of students. Many of the practices were reaching a quarter or less of the students that they're targeted to serve. Additionally, a lot of the practices were not made mandatory. This is something that is often recommended in the national literature as a way to reach more students. Additionally, we heard about some more targeted and comprehensive support, so support that could go beyond strictly academic support to include support that could help with some of the life commitment barriers. For example, when we went to PCC for our site visit, we talked to some students who participate in the Future Connect program, and they were very appreciative of the kind of support, the varied support that they got from their coaches, everything from helping them pick classes to getting bus tickets to being there when they could call them if they had a personal issue. So we found that with these efforts, there were also capacity constraints that were limiting. So the colleges reported that they need more resources to implement new strategies or scale up the strategies that already exist. We also found that CCWD has less capacity than it once had to provide the support and strategic support to the colleges for these strategies specifically, though with the recent governance changes, the HEC has been able to take on some of that role from CCWD and will likely continue that, of course. We also found specifically with data-informed decision-making that there were capacity constraints. Many of the small colleges, especially the small rural colleges, have very limited capacity to analyze their data to inform their decision-making. One of the colleges that we went to had a fifth of an FTE devoted for institutional research. And that position also includes mandatory reporting beyond just analysis. We also, for the data analysis at the state, there's also limited capacity for analyzing that data as well. And the colleges reported that they didn't have information about their students before and after they leave. So K-12 data, university data, employment data, that could help with planning, and it could help with assessing whether their programs are successful, and which would something that could be potentially addressed with a statewide longitudinal data system. We also looked a little bit at the potential for outcomes-based funding. The HEC and colleges are exploring the possibility of incorporating outcomes such as completions, associate degree certificates, as well as progression milestones into a funding formula currently is based on enrollment. We found that, as with any funding formula, there'd be risks of unintended consequences, but there are also mechanisms that can be built in to try to mitigate some of those consequences, and we found that the proposal, the most recent one that had been looked at, included a lot of those mechanisms. And we also found that it would require continued assessment and monitoring to make sure that there weren't more unintended consequences. So based on our findings, we have a number of recommendations. I'm not going to read all of them to you. They're all in the report in our executive summary. But I will go over the first few, clarifying roles and responsibilities and increasing capacity specifically for student success and completion initiatives, investing in the longitudinal data system, and increasing capacity specifically for data analysis. And you can. We also had some considerations specifically for the colleges. So. I would welcome any additional questions.
Thank you. Are there questions? Representative Wisdom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your presentation. You mentioned the Texas list. I didn't follow that, and you said something that our community colleges are doing 14 or the 18. Could you?
Sure. Chair Reed, Representative Wisnett, we surveyed all of the 17 colleges and the University of Texas Center for Community College Student Engagement has identified 14 practices that they recommend. And a lot of these practices were also recommended in other national literature that we looked at. So we surveyed the colleges to ask them which of them they're implementing. And we found that on average, they're implementing 10 of the 14 practices.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, please.
If you look at the chart and where we come out on the chart, I mean, the top is 50%, right? And that how's if that's the best, how are we going to do the 40-40-20?
Chair
Reed, Representative Wisden, I think that's a hard question, so I'll see what I can do to help. It really, you know, from the standpoint of what we want to accomplish versus what we can accomplish with the resources is one of the things that I think we're running into in this and other audits, that we aren't necessarily saying community colleges are more important than child protective services or, you know, juvenile justice. But in terms of trying to align what we've got and our expectations with the resources that we have is a real challenge. And when we're going out and doing audits, we find some opportunities for improvement, but they're never enough to close the gap, I don't think, especially in this case. So to that degree, we don't have a specific answer except that the goals are great for Oregonians to go for the 40-40-20, but the funding does not necessarily reach that point, and that's essentially one of the things that we see when we're doing these audits, and we feel it's appropriate to report to you when we find those situations.
That's very helpful, and I just add to that, as you were here when 40-40-20 was enacted too, but for me, the thing that was most helpful about that was to have an organizing principle and a thing against which we can measure other proposals. Is that taking us towards our goal or not? I think it's clear that part of the implication of this discussion and a lot of the other work we do is the need for additional funding for these kinds of approaches. But while doing that, we need to be looking at everything we can to do to be more efficient and effective. That's why I think your audit is very helpful.
President, a comment,
yeah, please.
Mr. Chair. But, you know, community colleges are the middle part of making all this work.
Mm-hmm.
And I have one follow-on comment or question to the presenters is, we hear a lot that community colleges spend a lot of resources and effort in bringing students up that graduated from high school without the ability to write or do math at the college level. Did you look at that and how much resources and things are spent on that?
Chair Reed, Representative Wisnett, this is our third audit of community colleges because we tend to believe the same thing, that they play three key roles in the education system. They help students who drop out of high school get a GED. They help students get a certificate or an associate degree that helps them with any kind of career they want in those fields, or they help the students get the credits so that they can enter a university. So those are three key roles that community colleges play for Oregonians, and so that's one of the reasons why we focused on community colleges in a number of audits. We agree that they're very important.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your comments about, let's just say, additional resources could help the situation, but if we're talking about the 07-08 cohort here, we're talking about prior to the cuts of the Great Recession. And, I mean, I think our colleges would be happy to be funded at that 07-08 level now. So my point would be, even when times were better, we didn't have these capacity systems in place, I guess, is the conclusion that I'm coming to. So going forward, if, in fact, there is more resources available, there have to be some of these capacity build-outs in that strategy as well. So I wanted to ask Caroline a question. Capacity constraints is in your report throughout.
Mm-hmm.
Are you able to define what that actually is? And I guess as you did data or compared Oregon to other states, perhaps, I don't know if you did that or not, are there things we can learn from how other states have some of these basic personal I mean, it's more than just FTE, I think. We're actually talking about some sort of strategies for engaging students, understanding what their needs are, making sure that their needs are being met, and helping them get to completion. Is there anything you learned as you delved into this?
Chair Reed, Representative Johnson, we did not specifically look at other states in that regard, but a lot of this evidence was more anecdotal. We heard a lot of different stories about specific constraints that colleges face. They gave us specific examples. For instance, one college wanted to make a program mandatory, but they had problems with programming their IT system to prevent students from registering if they hadn't done it. So they had a hard way of enforcing that, and part of that was because they had IT employment constraints and they couldn't afford a new IT system. Things like that.
Okay, thank you.
So Representative Johnson's question brings up an interesting point. If starting with the 0708 biennium, I was persuaded by your point, but I wonder if that has the effect, what effect the fact that, expenditures declined during the Great Recession, did that, can you conclude anything about what that did to the completion rates? Does that, on the one hand, you may be right, that might make it high. On the other hand, that might make it low or lower if the colleges were not able to do some of the other support services that they wanted to do in the middle of that seven-year cohort. Was there any evidence one way or the other on that?
Representative Reed, the evidence was mostly anecdotal in that area as well, but we did hear a lot of colleges report that during those cuts, specifically student support services were cut, which are some of the services that can help with student success and completion.
Representative Rudin? I'm just curious, is it possible just to take like what's happened the last 3 years and see if there's been, you know, increasing success in the last 3 years, instead of taking the entire cohort? Would that change the picture at all? Can we tell if we're improving or losing ground?
Chair Reed, Representative Rudin. It would be possible to look at things like retention rates and, you know, just a shorter completion rate than looking at the full 7 years and compare that back. That is not something that we did in our report, but that is possible.
Seems like that might be helpful. And then one last, and then if we did a report similar to this for the first 2 years of a four-year institution, are we able to do something like that and kind of do a comparison? I know you hate doing reports because people always want more information. But
we have looked at the higher education, the four-year, and we've done a number of audits on that, and we've looked at a six-year graduation period for the higher education, and they do have a higher completion rate there, so that's possible. And I think one of the things that we point out is the lack of capacity for doing this kind of data analysis on a year-by-year basis, and not only just at the university level, but at the HEC or community college level, that could provide you with kind of the metrics year-by-year on how they're doing and what programs are most needed and most successful, even down at a student level. And those are the kinds of things I think that can help them target the resources that they do have toward those students and the particular needs that they have. But at this point, you know, they don't have either the technical ability to tie the programs directly to the students and make sure that they're getting them, or to judge how that's having an impact broadly in terms of completion rates.
So the longitudinal database that we had presented the other day was kind of a good concept. Be very helpful.
Chair Reed, Representative Reardon, yes.
Thank you.
So I am not an auditor, as is clear from my questions, and this one may be an unfair one, but I wonder, as you were going through this process and completed it, were there things that you wish you had more time or more resource to delve into? Were there things that you encountered like, gosh, that deserves more investigation that this committee or the legislature ought to spend more time on?
Representative Reed, I think what we would have liked would have been to have access to more data. Uh-huh. And as was
doesn't,
mentioned.
Doesn't every auditor say that?
Right, I think so. I think that's what we dream about.
Yes. Okay.
If
if I could, Terry, just to follow up, the question regarding looking at the last 2 years, I think if we were to do that, or CCWD were to do that, just the caution would be that we know generally community college students take longer than 2 years. I think the chart that we have up right now shows that. And so if you looked at just the last 2 years, you may see a relatively low completion rate, knowing that it generally takes a little longer. But you may see, you know, greater than 6%. But again, you know, we wanted to demonstrate the success rate over a little bit longer, because that's reflective of the population.
Of course, a shorter sample means you're more subject to outside factors.
Correct.
Some kind
Correct.
Of outlier. Okay. Representative Nierman.
Very quickly, so, were you able to identify any kind of trend? So, like right now, 24% are completing. What was it in a previous year or prior to that?
Chair Reed, Representative Nierman, we only looked at the one cohort, so we did not do any trend analysis.
Okay, thank you. Did you have anything you wanted to present to, or you're also sort of on the question-answering front?
Yes, that's correct. Chair Reed, I would add, too, as Gary explained, you know, we've done several audits along these lines, and you raised the point about the longitudinal database, and that's something that we've mentioned in each of our audits. And in our report, we actually had recommendations to CCWD, HEC, and OEIB. Our understanding is that, you know, the longitudinal database, you know, is still underway. But again, we just want to point out that, you know, for looking at, you know, whether it's an audit or long-term planning, data, looking at data from high schools and community colleges and universities, and being able to look at that, you know, across the spectrum is not, you know, only helpful to auditors but to policymakers. So, you know, that I think we just want to reemphasize that point about that system and the availability of data.
Another endorsement of data. Thank you. Representative Gallegos.
Yeah, no, I guess I find it interesting that so much of our discussion is around completion, program completion. And again, when we talk about longitudinal data, I mean, it just seems to me that maybe a refocus on workforce development, I mean, again, integrating the data with regard to university success as well as workforce development, so on. So these are lofty goals, 40-40-20, but again, they're simply about graduation or completion, and what happens after that is important as well. So,
Chair Reed, Representative Gallegos, I agree. It would be great if they interviewed every incoming student and said, what are your education goals? What do you want to accomplish? And if a student says, I want to take 3 classes in some technical ability, and I'll be happy. If that's a measure of, if that's the goal, and it can be measured in some way in the data system, that would be another way to capture that kind of a student's goal. So, this is one that it's a little easier for us to draw out of the data, but we recognize that there are many students that come just for a few classes to bring their skills up in a particular area. And if the data system captured those kinds of needs also, I think it would give us a richer understanding of how we're satisfying all the students that are arriving at a community college.
Probably a wider range of those kinds of goals at the community colleges than a lot of other institutions. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Representative Rudin?
There's different types of data, and I used to teach marketing, and I cannot remember the term, but there's one sort of data that looks back at history. So the longitudinal database will allow you to look historically, this is what happened, we can adjust, and so forth. Or you can proactively go out and do marketing surveys, and maybe you talk to students in their first 2 years, and, you know, are we meeting your goals, and or, you know, that sort of thing. So does anybody do marketing surveys and try to find out our performance based on that? It seems it would be a little more timely.
That may also be a question worth asking the Community College Association, whom we'll hear from afterwards, but happy to hear your thoughts as well. Sounds like that's the direction we should go with the question. Okay. Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your report also talks about
some of the, I think, fallout perhaps from some of our governance changes in Oregon, i.e. in merging CCWD into the HEC and so forth. And there's been some, I think, maybe some loss in FTE there, or it's some transition in roles and so forth. But do you have any input regarding how that might have played a role, or what negative consequences there could be just in some of that change, those changes in governance that have happened, specifically regarding the CCWD?
Representative Reed, Chair Reed, Representative Johnson, we did hear that there was a often a lack of clarity around the roles, and a specific example would be less about CCWD and more between the HEC and the OCCA, that there could, the OCCA could play a greater role in providing some of this coordination, but that had not been clearly defined.
Okay. I'll take it up with them later. Thank you.
Okay. I think we may have exhausted our questions. Thank you very much for presenting and for your good work in the audit. Let's hear from Ben Cannon and Jim Middleton, please.
Good morning, Chair Reed, members of the committee. For the record, Ben Cannon, Executive Director for the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. I have a few summary remarks that I'll make before turning it over to Jim to provide a more detailed response to the audit. First of all, I just want to say this is a timely and important audit. And really, my 3 points begin with, number one, real appreciation for the work that the Secretary of State's office, Gary and his team have done. We really appreciate the process that they undertook, which was a highly collaborative one. It was a thoughtful one. It was a patient one. They showed a willingness to listen and learn, and their audit, and I think its comprehensiveness and its results and findings really speak to the high quality of the work that was done. My second point is one that the audit doesn't make directly, but I will, I think, on behalf of the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, and I think it's consistent with the audit's findings, and that is, if you were to have to summarize what our most significant challenge and opportunity is with respect to community colleges, it is completion. It is student success. It is not principally enrollment. Again, they don't say it quite that directly, quite that baldly, but I will. And our real challenge with community colleges is not to reach out to more students to enroll, although that would be great. It is to help more students who are enrolling today to complete and succeed. And I take and appreciate Representative Gallegos' point and others that it isn't simply about certificates and degrees. In fact, those are means to ends. There are other ways to measure and define student success, but clearly it is, that is an important marker. On the data, I know there's been attention to that, and appropriately, I'll just note here that the data that the Secretary of State's office and the analysis that they've done is quite consistent with others that we've done and that we've seen related to community college student success. So that 24% number to us seems consistent, even if it requires some of the caveats that you've heard from them and that are included in the report, including the fact that it doesn't take into account students who transfer to four-year universities or students who have other types of successful outcomes. My final point, we're really cheered by the audit's support for efforts underway at community colleges to improve student success. We're cheered by its findings around the state's role in supporting those and helping to coordinate those. I think the real question for state policymakers, for you and for my commission, is about resources. It's about sufficiency of resources to help scale those efforts, as the audit notes. It's also about how to focus those investments to ensure that they're maximizing impacts on student success. And from the commission standpoint, outcomes funding distributions are one potential mechanism for helping to focus those resources. Strategic investments that we make out of the Community College Support Fund to boost those local efforts are also promising opportunities for focusing resources that also require enhancement in order to improve our outcomes at community colleges. I do want to make sure that we address, I think, the question that Representative Johnson raised in the end around the merger and governance. I have thoughts on that, but I think I'm going to turn it over to Jim now to address the audit, and perhaps we'll come back to that.
Good.
For the record, Jim Middleton, Interim Commissioner, CCWD. I'll try to move quickly to leave room for questions and for the other panel. On any audit like this, I think what there's really three things you and we are trying to focus on. Is there an issue?
Yes.
What are some of the root causes and factors relative to the issue? And what can we and should we do? So firstly, is there an issue? Yes. It focuses first on the 24% number, and we need to be careful and not get stuck too much. It's the easy headline, and it's the one that we see. No matter if it's 20%, 36%, 32%, or 24%, it needs to be higher than what it is. But there are some factors with that. As was noted, that was not looking at our transfers. In Oregon, there is no direct advantage to completing the degree to transfer. In some states, there are. There is a priority for students who complete the degree.
Can I just stop you on that? I want to understand the advantage. In those other states, that means that someone who has an associate's degree goes to the front of the line for registration in another institution?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that's the right thing to do.
I just didn't know that. That's
interesting. Okay. We do not have that. So, and last year of our data, 13-14, for instance, we awarded 12,215 degrees. There were 26,700 transfers, though. So the number of transfers were double the number of degrees completed, and those degrees completed include the career degrees also. So most of our students who are transferring do not complete the degree. Also within the career area, a lot of students do not complete the degree. Even though I try to talk to them and say, finishing that last literature class or humanities class that will get you the degree, a welder often does not want to take all of those courses. And they, frankly, are prepared in the workforce to get the job, you know, based on their career skills and not the full degree. As was noted and is important, Oregon's community colleges are not ignoring the national environment of the kinds of initiatives that need to address some of these elements. The audit also points out that the students who come to the community college are challenging students of high need. That 24% is not high. It doesn't match Harvard, Princeton, Yale, and even North Carolina in its pass rates. But it's also a factor of what are you getting in the draft, the quality of the draft that you're getting. And what I am pleased about our community colleges in Oregon and nationally is we are open-door institutions. We take students with multiple and huge challenges. But as you do that, you cannot expect that they will match the university completion rates. And also, as is noted in the audit, when you are open door in that sense, it does demand the addition of comprehensive and significant additional support services pre-enrollment, during enrollment, and getting students to the finish line. Very quickly, some of the specifics, clarifying capacity and cooperation. I think this is ongoing as we look at OCCA, the Instructional Administrators, Student Success Oversight Committee, our Developmental Ed Redesign Work Group, and working with HEC. I think as HEC is maturing learning its new processes, some of those elements are not fully clarified and need to be worked through more. What I will say with some pride, though, is the players in this state play well in the sandbox together. I have been in other states. That is not always the case. And so there is a sense of, rather than just being mandated, the groups do work well together. Many of the questions that you asked of the previous panel certainly point out the importance of getting strong databases and data in place.
far too often, historically across the country and in Oregon, we make decisions or have positions based on hunch or anecdote rather than comprehensive data. We don't have that data at the campus level. We don't have it at the state level. We should be able to answer those questions that you asked, but that does take significant data systems and staffing that have historically not been available at HEC, CCWD, or at the campus level, and do create challenges. And so we need to do that, but we also need to do it in a very focused manner. Through the community college strategic fund, we'll likely be focusing some funds on the issue of helping some of the smaller colleges with some of their data needs. It is very difficult in some of the small rural communities to attract and retain people with the expertise that is necessary. We would like to investigate how some of that can be done at a collaborative level, or how the larger institutions may be able to do that on a contracted basis to some of the smaller institutions. Other noted recommendations talk that we do need to analyze an outcome model as we put it in place. I think there's a good model in the university outcome system of a every 2 year analysis and critique of the system, and should the community colleges proceed with outcomes-based funding, I would recommend that we do echo that kind of very systematic review to see, are there unintended consequences? Are there the intended successes that we had hoped? And finally, the audit spoke to the importance and underlined their endorsement of setting aside at least 1% of the support fund for a strategic fund for collaborative and strategic initiatives. The HEC board next week will take up the recommendation of allocating 1.5% of that, which will actually, since the support fund has increased, almost double the amount of money in the support fund. That's something to celebrate. However, it is a zero-sum game, and when you put money into the support fund, you take money away from what's being distributed to the individual colleges to implement those initiatives. So it's moving money rather than creating, you know, new funds. And so we do have to look carefully as we look at new initiatives to take those elements on, of examining, do they take resources away from the individual campuses in their particular initiatives. So as I said, in the spirit of trying to leave room for the other panel and your questions, I will stop at that point.
Thanks. So I'm sure there are lots of questions. I want to ask one off the top, which I think is sort of a more generic one. I appreciated your point about the difference between community colleges and four-year institutions and the sort of populations that you serve and those challenges. I appreciate that number, but I can't help looking at page 14 of the audit, which stacks up those rates community college to community college, and we're still not coming out very well there, even over the overall average, even relative to some of the other states. So could you address, from your perspective, what accounts for our relatively poor performance relative to other community colleges, and maybe draw on your experience in other states that you talked about?
Chair Reed, committee, at the most simplistic level, I think it does come down to resources, that when we say we fund higher education at 47th in the nation, is it fair to expect that we should be producing results that are above average with significantly, you know, less resources?
Well, I think we've got a ways to go to get to average, though, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, but I'm saying is, if we look at even being average. So I think if it does come back to those 3 points that we looked at, is there an issue? Yes. We are not performing as well as we should relative to the others nationally. I think part of that is that there are some states that do have different incentives for students for the completion. There are states with stronger support services as far as some of those elements are concerned. There are differences as far as what some of the financial aid bases, you know, are, you know, in different states. I think that, again, part of what we need to be able to do is to have some of the analytics that define where are the biggest leaks in the pipeline. That is a data element. So my response, again, I think at the bad sense, is it would be more of an anecdotal sort of my own history feeling. That's the wrong way to answer the question. I should be able to answer the question of saying, here are the descriptions of the students that we are losing the most. And so one of those data points is, and it reflects nationally, black males, for instance, have the lowest completion rate nationally, 2-year and 4-year, and we need to look at concentrating efforts in those areas, as we do have some specific programs at individual institutions that do that.
Maybe offline, I'd be interested if there's a summary or a compilation of those incentives in other states that you mentioned. That'd be interesting to me, too. Are there other questions? Sorry to take the first one. Representative Johnson, then Representative Gallegos, then Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I've got one for Ben and then one for Jim both. But, Ben, I was looking in your response to the audit, and I think I underlined the phrase. It says, the issue is not a lack of initiatives. Which is so true. I mean, I've been in this building for 5 years now, and we've had initiative after initiative kind of focused on student success, completion. I think I even served on an interim task force after 11 that was came out of House Bill 24 or something or other, that where we, it was universities, colleges, try to identify what are those big rocks in the way of student completion and stuff, and I have no idea where that report is now. But I think we were talking about those same things here. So I guess my point would be, from our perspective, from the legislative perspective, what does the heck need, or what would you need to be able to make sure that some of these initiatives are actually being carried out and are being implemented in a way that can improve student performance and completion?
Representative Johnson, Chair Reed, funding and focus. I so appreciate you highlighting that point in the letter. And I can speak to this less from a college standpoint. Obviously, I don't work at a college, but I certainly can speak to it from a state standpoint. CCWD, and now CCWD the heck, struggle with a small staff, mm-hmm. and we can talk about that, to manage and lead and implement many, many initiatives. Some of those come from the legislature. Some of them are ones of our own devising. I will note... proudly, our commission resisted the temptation to bring to this legislature ideas for new initiatives for community colleges. We have worked hard to bring funding requests and notions about how to distribute funding in ways that support ongoing work around student success. But the problem here and the challenge here is not the lack of ideas or understanding at a campus level or at a state level about how to improve student outcomes. We know what works. What we don't do is fund those efforts adequately and focus those efforts in a way that permits that funding really to equal the challenge. And I think that's absolutely at the heart of our challenge with respect to this work.
Thank you. So, Jim, talking about, again, the clock is ticking on 40-40-20 and has been for 4 years now and so forth. And this report obviously says that barring any, I mean, on the current pathway, we simply aren't going to get there. And I don't want to come back here 2 years from now having the same conversation again about, geez, we got to make something happen. So the time for implementing changes is now, I think. And I guess what I'd like to see from OCCA and in a collaboration with CCWD is, what can we do? What specific outcomes can we try to accomplish these next 2 years in this biennium so that we're not here? We can say we've made progress on this. But in addition, but let's look at it outside of simply dollars. What measures could we put in place, or what kind of expectations could be placed upon the colleges for better performance?
Two areas I think are in progress, Representative Johnson, I think can be helpful in that area. I think there's some great work being done on developmental ed redesign. And just a few examples for you. And again, this is database. Where students who enter the college are tested to see whether they're ready for college-level mm-hmm. courses. The biggest barrier to student success is math. Nationally, if you put students in a remedial class that is three classes below college level, they have about a 2% chance of ever getting a degree. That horrifies us. And so part of that answer is looking at how do we change the way we do remediation, developmental education to accelerate those processes. The second is we treat every student nationally as if they are pre-calculus students. We do an Algebra 2 sequence that is the prerequisite for calculus, though our students aren't doing calculus, but that's been the gold standard of what you do in math. We're looking at what other math is still math with integrity, but meets their needs. So in many areas, it's statistical or quantitative methods is much more important than a pre-calculus route. So that is work that is ongoing, and I think as we look at a marker, completing some of that work, we looked at funding some of that through the strategic fund as part of the recommendation, looking at actual changes that are there. I think looking at also trying to make some fundamental movement forward on research capacity and ability to do predictive analytics at the state and at the campus level, I think, are two things that can be significant steps forward. Both of those, again, are partly resource connected, but not fully.
Okay. Follow up. Earlier, you touched on data, the idea about data. Now, some of our smaller campuses, you know, have a difficult time providing, you know, some of that just because of the size and constraints. But has it been viewed as potentially trying to do something as we do at the K-12 level with ESDs? Every district doesn't necessarily do all their own data. They don't do all their own technology. They purchase those services from an ESD who has a bigger capacity. Is that being talked about where some of the smaller universities or colleges could actually contract with the larger campuses who could have that data so they wouldn't have to replicate, or that data services, they wouldn't have to replicate that
right
out on the coast or in the gorge or wherever right they might be?
Right. Yeah, Chair Reed, Representative Johnson, I did mention that that's part of the discussion that's been going on, that some of the larger institutions have tentatively offered to exploring how they might be able to do that. What I think where that makes sense is that if you have staff at a larger institution, mm-hmm, they understand the problem, they exactly understand what needs to be done, and they can do that more quickly and I think better on a contracted basis to some of those smaller institutions. So I think that goes back to looking at where we may be able to make, you know, some significant progress in the next 2 years, is examining what those possibilities are and looking at facilitating some of those partnerships.
One final follow-up, and this is
feeling bad for Representative Gallegos.
It's okay. Yeah, he's answered all my questions.
It gets to the again, coming back to the governance issue again. You know, there's going to be some changes this session, specifically coming out of Senate Bill 215, with the OEIB and board going away. The chief education officer, you know, remains in a kind of a collaborative and a coordinating role. And I don't want to put anybody on the spot here, but do you foresee a positive in that, in the CE, chief education officer, in this discussion we're having today, or would one more cook in the kitchen make these improvements more difficult, I guess? Is there support that could come from the OEIB in some fashion, or would it be better to keep the lines of communication more clear and less cluttered?
Representative Johnson, Chair Reed, I'll take a shot. I think that the proposed alterations and clarifications of the role of the chief education officer are valuable. I think given that many of the challenges and issues that the audit and we have identified associated with community colleges are ones that K-12 has a role in helping to solve, and we with K-12, having a convener for that, conversations that involve that shared space is very, very important. That's been my experience of Nancy and the OEIB over the last couple of years, and I think that that is something I continue to look forward to and think can bring a lot of value in the work.
Okay, thank you.
So, Gallegos, you're up.
Yeah, I just had a comment. I mean, it has to do with focus, I think. I mean, I, as you might notice, I tend to focus less on 40-40-20. I mean, it's, I try to think about why. What is it 40-40-20 is about? What is it we want that goal to achieve? And seems to me it's an educated workforce, higher income earning workforce, less dependent on state funds and so on. And again, how do we get to that place? And I liked your point, Jim, about that transfers, we should think about transfers as well as completion rates. And also the notion that maybe a career person may not need to complete a degree, for example. So I don't know if those kinds of completions are included in our statistics or not, but I do think that that's a great point to think about.
Yeah, Chair Reed, Representative Gallegos, that is part of what we're searching for in that data, too, is to make stronger links between employment data and the educational data so that we can really see, are we having an impact on employment? Are we having an impact on income? Are we having an impact on job advancement, job retention? And we don't have the data to really answer those elements, and those should be guiding the decisions and allocations and focuses that we create.
Representative Rudin.
Thank you. I'm just a little bit, I want to come back to my question I asked of the other panel, and what I'm trying to get at is, you know, we have an institution here that provides a service, and I think collecting data is absolutely, we need to do a better job over the long term of doing that, but I'm still hung up on the idea of, are we asking our customers, are we meeting your needs? And instead of setting an arbitrary goal of 2-year completion as the, you know, that's the magic marker. If we don't do that, well, you know, we're failing. And that customer may tell you that, hey, I never planned on going for 2 years. I wanted to go for a year and a half to do this, that, or the other thing. And so I think that there's a role here for some primary marketing data, if you will, that ask our customers. So our, and I don't know if we have the capacity and the funding to do that, but I think it's really worth thinking about. Are we doing what some of the most successful companies do and really talking to your customers about what services they need? Are we meeting your needs and so forth? And because if I go to that community college and I talk to the kids, I talk to the staff, I'm usually just blown away by what I see. So it's hard for me to think that they're failing. But if I look at 24% over 7 years, I'm thinking, oh, my God, what is this? This is chaos. So there's something, you know, I'm not sure we're asking the right questions.
Chair Reed, Representative Reardon, right on. And I think that is part of the element of that comprehensive data that we need to build. There are colleges that have made some efforts to collect that. And part of our challenge at community colleges is you need to be careful with sticking with the first thing a student tells you, because many of them have not been in the educational system. And if you say, well, 5 years ago you told us that this was your goal, part of what they do is that goal matures and changes. So it's not just what was their original goal, but what's their current goal, and then linking back to what is their level of satisfaction, you know, with those elements. Part of that also comes back into your advising and student support systems, because that's not just a data element. It's developing a personal relationship with student support staff, with administrators, and with faculty, that faculty member and student support member knows that student, knows where they are in their life, knows where they are with their particular challenges, knows the system, and helps put the student and the educational system together best to serve what that student needs in terms of their individual goals. And, you know, what we tended to do nationally is just say, and I've been in this community college game for almost 40 years, is sort of pride ourselves that we're open door and we let them in. And then, you know, historically, it was often let them figure it out, you know, on their own. But there is great work being done at our colleges to really recognize that that is our first step, is getting them through the door. And we have a much more intensive continuing responsibility. And yes, if we say the only sign of success is completion of a degree or certificate, we will not be fulfilling our mission. It is much broader than that.
Thanks very much. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Cannon, I'll get questions to you offline, a little specific. But Dr. Middleton, you mentioned helping the smaller community colleges. Does the data from the Secretary of State's audit, do you have that broken down by the all of our community colleges? And is there, could smaller ones having, 17% or 14%, or did you look at that? And is that something then you'll be looking at to how to address that?
Yeah, Chair Reed, Representative Wisnett, I don't believe that the audit broke it out for individual colleges. And I think that was a wise decision because the intent was not to say who are our winners, who are our losers. I think there's challenges in that because also our rural communities often face significantly different challenges, and to judge them on the same basis as a metropolitan area college can be challenging. Much of what they were talking about, though, was looking at the interviews that they had with the colleges and recognizing the issue such as staffing and IT and research support is a problem system-wide and statewide. It is a critical issue at the local colleges. They just can't have enough staff with the expertise that's necessary and retain them over a long term. That I think that was one element that they highlighted as a really critical factor. The small colleges do face a lot of critical mass issues too. That you to have the talent, you often want a full-time person who's going to stay in the job, but the full-time person in that is a significantly bigger budget commitment for the smaller institutions.
Go ahead. Thank you for those comments. My thinking outside the box is that those small schools don't have the courses offered at all the times to help the people get to a certificate or a con. And to me, we need to use technology and see if those students can Skype into the class. I spoke to a PhD class at PSU, and we had someone from Switzerland was attending the course, the PhD program. So I think those are things that maybe could help them and affect the completion number. But we'll, thank you.
Yeah, certainly, I think it's a good point. Certainly, it's probably harder to do that for a welding class than a short. But you knew that.
Yeah, but I was thinking more of the people are trying to work towards a 4-year. I think.
Yeah, good point. Good. Other questions for either of these gentlemen?
Mr. Chair,
yes, please.
If there was another question, before we left, I wanted to make sure that we addressed, that I addressed at least briefly, the staffing and capacity question that Representative Johnson raised, and to put it in the context of the governance changes. This chart illustrates changes in the overall staffing and then the mix of funds that supports staffing levels at CCWD over the last several biennia. It's small. We'll get it to the committee electronically as well, so you can peruse it. The y-axis here is the FTE, and then the different colors reflect different funding sources, general fund being blue, other funds being red, and federal funds being green. The significance of the funding sources is that most of the work that we're describing here, supporting student success initiatives at community colleges, supporting research and data, has to be generally funded. The federal funds, which are primarily workforce related dollars, are not typically available for those types of investments. So pay attention to that blue bar. Note how low a number of FTE at CCWD this was even in 2007-09, and it has shrunk since then. Also note that shrink in overall FTE and general fund FTE is the result of essentially the state budget picture that this legislature dealt with starting in 2008 as the bottom fell out of the economy and out of state revenues. It is not the result of changing governance. In fact, there's been some enhancement of CCWD's opportunities to support colleges, I would argue, as a result of coming within a larger organization that brings some additional HEC-related staff to bear around capacity. So I wouldn't confuse the longer-term trend and what I think you and the auditor focused on, and I think the audit notes this as well, the long-term trend of or medium-term trend of some downsizing at CCWD with governance changes that have taken place only since 2013-14.
Representative
Wisnett. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Cannon, I appreciate that. But I think the financial picture, you also have to include tuition and property tax, right?
Representative Wisnant and Chair Reed. So this graph is focused exclusively on the several million dollars. It's a very small amount of money comparatively that the state and the federal government principally invest into CCWD, our state agency. So you're absolutely correct that if we were auditing the financial picture at our colleges, it would be a complex mix of local funds, federal funds, and state funds. This is simply that, the CCWD, our office.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Very helpful. We also want to hear from Andrew Henderson and Elizabeth Cox Brand, please. While you're getting settled, I want to say, speaking only for myself, I think I'm ready to stipulate that there needs to be more money in community colleges. But at least for myself, I'm particularly interested in other reactions to the audit. I don't think anybody here is going to argue that there's a need with the proposition that there's a need for more funding. Short of that, I'm particularly interested in what other things we need to be doing and what your reactions are beyond saying, yes, we'd be doing so much more if there's more money. We get that. So,
great.
Please.
So, Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association. And Elizabeth Cox Brand, our Student Success Director, was not able to be with us today. Mm-hmm. So I have with me Dr. Jessica Howard, who is the campus president of the Southeast Campus of PCC. And she has been key in our student success efforts, and we thought it'd be helpful to hear from somebody from a college about the work that's being done.
Great.
So let me start with saying how much we appreciate the audit. We think it very clearly highlights the biggest challenge we have in community college right now and is very clear on the work that we need to do. So we appreciate this focus and highlight on the problems that we have with completion. This is not news to us, and it's something that from the college perspective we've been working on for about 8 years now. About 8 years ago, our former commissioner, Cam Preuss, put together a student success oversight committee. And we had NCHMS come in and took a very hard look at our data. And frankly, we didn't like what we saw. We weren't doing enough to help students get out the door. We were doing a great job of getting people in the door, but it's not enough for students to come in, rack up debt, and leave without getting something that's meaningful. And so having that support services in place and strategies to help them complete is really the critical piece. This is part of not just an Oregon conversation, but a national conversation. As community colleges, we change our focus to being about access to being about access and completion. It's been some tough conversations on the national level as well, and a very clear recognition that the structures that we have in place are not enough for our students. So we've been looking very specifically about what we can do to change this. Our Student Success Oversight Committee has been meeting for close to 8 years now and has come up with a number of recommendations that we think are helpful and are actually changing the dial. I wanted to give most of the time over to Dr. Howard, but let me talk about a couple of things in response to some of the questions that were raised here earlier. First, we do have some data that we are starting to change the dial. In the last 3 years, our number of certificates and associate degrees that we are awarding has increased dramatically, and I will send these numbers out to you in an email to follow. But from 2011, our certificates have gone up from 6,700 a year to 8,900 a year, which we think is a very good increase. It's not enough, but we can see that our strategies are starting to make a difference. Secondly, our associate degrees in the last 3 years have gone up from 9,400 a year, and I'm rounding the numbers, to 12,000 a year. So they are very significant increases. It's a start. There's a lot more that we need to do to really kind of focus these efforts. We do have a lot of the right answers out there. The biggest challenge we have right now is taking it to scale. Part of it's money. I'll put that aside. But the other part is to make systemic change in institutions. It takes a lot of work. It takes time, and it takes a process to get everybody in the institution committed to that change and to really be thinking about how they serve students differently. We are turning the corner on it. We've got a long ways to go. But it's really going to take that leadership and that concentrated work, both of the colleges and the partnership that we have with HEC and CCWD, to make those changes. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Howard to talk more specifically about what we're doing.
Thanks, Dr. Howard.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, my name is Jessica Howard, and I'm a campus president at Portland Community College Southeast. It's my privilege to speak with you today, and of course, 75% of what I was going to say has already been said. So I will try to give you a little bit of specific information as it pertains to PCC, which, as you know, is very, very large compared to the group of 17 community colleges in the state. And so we have some, you know, maybe interesting specifics to provide. First, I do think it's a good thing that we've had this audit, because student success is core to our mission. It's absolutely critical that we continue to think about what it means to reach educational goals for our students and how we can support that. As many of you have pointed out, what is one person's goal may not be another person's goal. And keeping in mind the wide variety of reasons that people come to community college, and also when they get, they may get hired along the way, and what does that do to the viability of the completion number at a specific point along the way. I will say that our, to give an example, we have a tremendously successful welding program on Swan Island. Very few of those students actually complete because they are in such demand and they go right into the workforce. This is not an anomaly. This happens. So these are all things to keep in mind when we look at data. It's we have complex operations, and having a single marker or measure and to expect a silver bullet to really move all these different people to different places in a way we can measure and understand is complicated. Doesn't mean we shouldn't be accountable, and it doesn't mean we shouldn't do better. So we appreciate all of that information that's come forward. I will say, as Andrea mentioned, it is a national topic of conversation. Every single community college conference that I or anyone else goes to, it's the issue now is scaling up. What do you scale? How much do you scale? How much can you expect to gain from wide-scale efforts? Sometimes 7% is the largest you would ever expect to see an increase based on this or that particular effort. And so right now the question is, what do you scale? We know what efforts work. For instance, there is a particular program out of CUNY in New York. It's in Manhattan, and it's called the ASAP program. And one of the reasons that that program is very successful is that it requires students to be there full-time, and it has a heavy, heavy advising component. Every advisor has a workload of 60 students. At my campus at PCC, we have about 12,000 students, and we have 5 advisors. It is night and day what we're talking about here. So some of it obviously is resource-based, but some of it also is figuring out what strategic investment works for which location, for which group of students, and how you prioritize all of those things. It is complex. Also, of course, the reality is we serve a great number of students who come to us with barriers, and what does that mean for us in the future, particularly as we anticipate demographic changes and some of the structural inequities that mark our various systems? This is not a problem that's going to go away in the sense of how do we make success possible for the students for whom the stakes are the highest. So these are all key issues. So we have at PCC a handful of programs, and you've heard of them already, so I won't go into detail. We have 3 TRIO programs, which are federally funded student success programs for first-generation low-income and, in some cases, disabled students. The results from those programs are absolutely astonishing. This is the comparison group would be your Pell-eligible population, and those students are graduating at a 58% rate, and they're transferring at an over 70% rate. Also, their average age is about 36. So this is a population for whom these services are tremendously useful and successful. We serve about 400 students a year. As you know, headcount, credit students at PCC, closer to 70,000. So that gives you a sense we're doing great work with this group, but again, it's the scale. Secondly, Future Connect is our signature program that is tremendously successful in moving students, not just in helping them once they get to PCC, but navigating that chasm between the high school and the college, which is so fraught with danger. And that is an extremely successful program. That's $2,500 a student per year. We serve about 600 students currently. We've served about 900 students in the past 4 years. Again, fantastic program, heavily leveraged with local dollars, but takes a tremendous amount of effort to continue that work and continue to you know, get those funds. Same bottom line. These things work. We know that they work. It's just really difficult to scale up. One bright spot I thought I would share is that we've done something recently at PCC as the result of a $2 million federal Department of Education grant called the FLAIR Project. And this has allowed us to provide tremendous resources to students regarding financial literacy. This effort has significantly lowered our student debt rate, which hasn't really been discussed today. And it's the kind of thing that's so remarkable. It puts students in connection with scholarships. It has specific things for veterans. It's a navigational tool that is, it's really tremendous. We have presented on the FLAIR grant at innumerable conferences nationwide, and we get community colleges from all over the nation that come up afterwards and say, how in the world were you able to do this? How can we duplicate it? Well, it's because we got a $2 million grant. So sometimes these focused, strategic, you know, efforts really can move the dial. And because Oregon is so tremendously collaborative, and this is no different among the 17 community colleges, there are opportunities for us to leverage, share work product, share information. These are all, this is the good news, and this is where I think we can do more work and that we are doing work. Last thing I'll say is we're doing, it's already been mentioned that we're using our strategic fund, which is what we're calling the 1% set aside from the Community College Support Fund to do things like the DevEd redesign, which has been tremendous, but also we're funding career pathways, and those are short-term certificates. You may know about them, but you'd be hard-pressed to find two efforts that aren't going to make a really big impact for Oregon's community college students. We're doing that through that support fund, but again, that fund comes out of the pot that was coming to us for operations. So that it's a bit of a misnomer because it implies that it's special strategic funding, but what we're doing is simply saying, let's just take a little bit of this over here so we can again work together. So I think we are extremely happy that you're interested in some of the details of our world, and I think we have a lot of interest and effort in trying to make our outcomes better. We just appreciate the chance to talk with you today. Happy to take any questions if you have any.
Thanks very much. Questions, Representative Davis?
Yeah, I really appreciate your presentation. I guess to me what it really brought to mind is the fact, and no disrespect for the audit, you know, the aggregate data tells you some things, but it really doesn't really dive down. I really appreciate your talking about your particular programs. And it just, for me, really emphasizes the fact that I know that our 17 community colleges are unique. I mean, they really serve unique purposes, unique populations, and I think we need to somehow get a hold of that uniqueness as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, you guys, for being here. Appreciate your testimony. I guess I would push back just a little bit, however, on characterizing the strategic fund as being a draw from the general fund. And what I would like to say, I guess, is that I would characterize that strategic fund going forth as kind of a foundation building fund or initiative. I'm a home builder. You know, if you're going to build a house, you got to start with a foundation. Okay, nothing else holds together. The roof doesn't hold it. You know, you can't build a house or any building without some sort of a stable foundation. And that's what I guess I would like to see that strategic fund characterize at going forward. We've got to get in place that sound foundation with those supports that we're talking about. And we all acknowledge that we need to have, and we've had study after study and initiative after initiative that says we got to do it. So my point would be going forward, that strategic fund, whatever that means, if it's bigger this biennium, great, but let's not look at it as taking away on the back end, because we're going to have to make that front end investment so we can be more successful. So students can be more successful going forward. Andrew, you talked about systemic change. Yeah, obviously, you know, it takes time. So from our perspective, again, as legislators, we've tried the carrot approach, maybe enticements, inducements to try to get folks to go forward. But is it time for a bit more of a stick, let's say, in tying funding to some specific outcomes at the local level. I mean, I know you represent 17 boards and so forth and presidents, but, you know, I think, again, I don't want to sit here 2 years from now having the same conversation that it's time to start. It's time to start. If we just had this, we'd get to there. You know, and I think the state, as they read this report and my feedback from my constituents on the home front, is it's time to get moving in the right direction. So what kind of comments might you have about tying? Again, we're talking about some budget numbers. Maybe it's 550 or whatever that number is, but I think that's great. But I think there needs to be some sort of language in there talking about for this additional investment, there needs to be XYZ in place.
Can I add to your question and see if it fits with your intention? And maybe just to be more specific, we heard the presentation on the HEX proposal around outcomes-based funding. Does that fit with your question?
That, I guess, as well. But perhaps, Mr. Chair, having some strings attached to additional funding over and above a certain level. You know, we're talking about additional monies perhaps being available in the revenue forecast. But we know there's some things that need to happen, I think, just to provide for greater support around the colleges. But again, as we think about other initiatives we're kicking around the building this session, i.e. free community college and stuff, for that to be successful, there's going to have to be additional supports in place, and we all want that. So in the time to begin to really get serious about that, I think, is now. So we want to help you, but we're also not wanting to, you know, get that song and dance, I guess, back from those college boards and those presidents saying, woe is us, we can't do it, because I think we have to do it.
Okay. Chair Reed, Representative Johnson. So first, I would say we absolutely agree that we're past the time to start. And I would say from the college's perspective, we have started. Mm-hmm. We've been working on this for a number of years now. We've made some progress. We're going to make more progress. And so I want to be really clear that, as we continue to come in and talk to you, my commitment is that we continue to show change and progress and improvement. That is critical, because that's really our commitment to our students, to make sure that we are giving them a better product and helping them to complete. And I think certainly our numbers in terms of the degrees and certificates shows that we have made improvement. In terms of what we can do to really focus that, as you can imagine, we have had many, many, many conversations about the formula and the budget and how do you use the money in a way that best helps us to complete. And I think that's really the key question, is how is the money structured in a way that helps us with our work with the students, so that those students are completing. We've been working for quite a while on an outcomes-based funding model. Frankly, we don't have all the right answers yet. And we're not sure that necessarily that the way it's structured is going to help move that dial. We're continuing to look at that. I think that the key here is the question is, how do we structure our finances so colleges have that place to make different decisions that move towards completion? It's hard to do that when it's a smaller pot of money and it's a zero-sum game. But that being said, I think we are working very specifically to try to come up and find what those answers are. One of our concerns with the outcomes-based funding is that those states that have already implemented aren't necessarily showing that the dial's changing. And so we want to make sure that anything that we do is actually moving that dial to a different place. It may be part of it is a different way to do strategic investments around making sure that money gets into some of the support services. I wish I had all the answers for you. I could say if we just do X, Y, and Z, it's going to make a difference. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we're just not there yet. But we want to continue that dialogue with you and get to the place where we are structuring our finances in a way that even furthers our completion efforts.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time here, and as is evidenced by people leaving to go to their other obligations, it's not any indication of our lack of interest in this topic. I really appreciate the conversation today, both from the audit perspective and reactions to it. I think it's something we'll continue to take up through the rest of the session and on into the interim. Any last words from those few hearty souls who are still here? Thank you very much for being here. I'm going to close the informational hearing. And we are not meeting on Friday unless something really unexpected happens. So stay flexible. Exactly. Nor on Monday, but next Wednesday, expect an interesting hearing based on a company that has a large presence in Oregon around some of these wraparound services called Inside Track. So look forward to seeing them then. We're adjourned. Nobody's listening anyway. So. nobody's listening anyway. So. And then we're adjourned.